Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course. That's the name football, of the show. The other name is off topic.
But this is football. What you want? We've got a mighty population, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know we talk about the main stories. And our Mountain West matters. Where will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you rant about this podcast too. Just a side with Jeremy. We do some good interviews. And you know, from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Aston, they're calling out our name. Where will you? You listen to this podcast too.
Here we go.
You love this podcast too.
Welcome back. Week 13 recap, Mountain West Connection podcast. Our website's mwcconnection.com. Facebook, got a lot of interaction with the coaching news. Mountain West Connection there. Twitter, MWC Connection as well. Jeremy Moss, Matt Kennerly, and good evening, my friend.
Yeah, you know, just here to talk about a run-of-the-mill Saturday.
No, please. This weekend had everything you wanted, but nothing what we expected.
Well, depending on your perspective, maybe it was nothing.
Well, yeah, but
if you're certain fan bases out there, I apologize to all of you.
Why? We're biased. Come on.
Well, I'm just talking about in general. Maybe it wasn't what you wanted if you were, say, a San Diego State fan or perhaps a Wyoming fan out there. Or even us, you know, suffering Fresno State fans. Probably not what we wanted to see on Saturday.
Or an insufferable minority Boise State outspoken fan.
We'll get to that.
We will definitely get to that. So week 13, pretty crazy. There's a lot on the line. Kind of anticlimactic on Friday, which we'll start there. But let's just get into it, because we'll have coaching news. We'll discuss all the changes that happened today, where there was one firing and one, air quotes, mutually agreed to part ways.
That's rhetoric for fired.
Yes, we'll get to that as well. Paint hasn't even dried and you're out of town, but let's start Friday night, or Friday afternoon, I should say. Black Friday, if you're shopping, whatever. I picked up a few things at 2 a.m., so that worked out well for me. But Boise State at Air Force. Can we just say it's not a triple option issue, but an Air Force issue for Boise State?
Well, I mean, I think you could make that for at least this particular game. 27-20. Of course, Air Force ended up winning the game. But when you look at the rushing numbers, for instance, they only averaged 4.1 yards per carry. And that, I think, in most weeks would be a really big win. But then you start looking at other numbers, like, for example, the time of possession. Right, was hugely in Air Force's favor. They held the ball for over 41 minutes.
Jeez.
And they were 8 of 18 on third down, which was, you know, not quite 50%, but it's a little better, I believe, than their season average. And they...
You know what it's also better than? Boise State's 1 of 12.
That is very true. So, you know, they were maybe as explosive as you would have expected them to be on the ground, you know, because I'm looking at how many, you know, 10-yard plays on the ground they had. They only had 5, which is maybe a couple less than you might have anticipated against this defense that's had trouble with the triple option in the past. But they did just enough to just keep moving the chains down the field and taking advantage of enough opportunities to come away with a victory.
Yeah, they just chipped away. The long was only 23 from Aaron Worthman. He's looking pretty good at QB. Here's a couple things I've noticed, a trend this whole season for Boise State. Brian Harsin wants to throw the ball with a quarterback who, Brett Rypien, he's doing fine, but I think we can all say he's not playing as good as last year in some areas, and they just want to. I remember mentioning this like in week three when they were playing Oregon State. They were up big. They're cruising. Then they decided, I think, their first four possessions in the second half were all three and outs, and I think majority were throws no matter what and not giving it to McNichols. And in this game, Rypien was 9 of 20. This is a weird stat line. 9 of 26.
Uh-huh.
316 yards.
Well, with that kind of yards per completion, can you blame them for wanting to throw the ball? What's even weirder is that Spurbeck and Wilson, Cedric Wilson, were entirely responsible for all of that yardage.
Yeah. This game, a couple of things in this game that happened. Let's just kind of get to some plays. There was a key block, special teams play for Air Force, who got a touchdown for them. Mm-hmm. And then let's go to the very, very last play of the game, because I'm going to harp on this like I did San Diego State.
Okay.
Okay. Formation was jumbo goal line set, which means you're going to run the ball, right? Most likely. 90% maybe a naked boot or something, but Rypien's not at the athletic type, I would say. That's not as what they want to do with him. Let's put it that way. So you got jumbo package. Okay, cool. Run's coming. All right, we know that. You have a Jeremy McNichols who did okay. He had one big play, but shut down mostly after that 56 yarder, but he's a good back. Mm-hmm. You could do play action or maybe do a screen play. That could work. You're like at the half yard line or even a QB sneak, which they did. However, I guarantee Brett Rypien went sideways longer than he did upward toward the goal line. Why does he take a half a step to the side and go behind a guard and not just pummel behind a center?
Honestly, I have no idea. Maybe that was kind of the design. Maybe he saw something that we just, by looking at it on TV, couldn't see. Like, I don't have a problem with that particular call on fourth down because, you know, you gave it to McNichols three straight times, first, second, and third down. I mean, you could make a quibble like, yeah, maybe they should have tried to throw it at least once, maybe. You know, because when you look back at where they started on that drive, they started at their own 9-yard line and they got to the Air Force 5 in two plays.
You know, yeah, there's some big plays.
One was a 39-yard completion to Cedric Wilson, one was a 47-yarder to Thomas Spurbeck. So if I'm a Boise State fan, I might wonder why they didn't try to throw it at the goal line and try and find one of those guys. But I mean, to me, the quarterback sneak, for instance, I think in that situation, it makes a little more sense.
I think it does, but when they go jumbo package, that's the only play you have, essentially. They know it's running up the middle. They could put all 9-11 guys around the line of scrimmage.
It's either that or play action, isn't it?
There's that, but why not spread it out a little bit where you have you call the same play, but bring out two wide receivers, bring out a second running back who goes in motion, so they can't bring every single player they have available on the line of scrimmage.
I mean,
I know you can still 6, 7, or 8 guys in there, but that does a little bit. I think they're basically telepathing the play when they do go jumbo, no wideouts, 4 tight ends, and a back.
Yes.
I'm just saying to open up just enough to make the defense not think a little bit.
But at the same time, the counter argument to that is we need 1 yard.
They needed half a yard.
And Brian Harsin trusted his guy, his quarterback, to get him that 1 yard. And Air Force just made a play. So I don't think that was necessarily the fault of the coaching. I think it was a good call. I don't think it was necessarily the fault of Rypien for, you know, maybe trying to find a hole where there wasn't one. You know, it's basically, you know, you need 1 yard and the other team has to stop you from getting 1 yard. And the other team, Air Force, just happened to be able to do that.
Do you want to know how many rushing yards Brett Rypien has all year?
Sure.
I'm doing it correctly here. I know there's sacks included, but it's looking like fewer than 0 yards rushing.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So, I get your point. The play's not the bad play, but it's the execution of the play. Like, even with San Diego State, that play, I'm like, well, I could see how that could work. There's a guy unblocked, but you're basically, I know you only need 1 yard. It's like my big guys versus your big guys. Let's do it. I get that point, but, and Air Force made a great play to stop back, half a yard. That's all they needed. And Air Force is undersized linemen due to who they can bring into campus and everything. But my only problem is, like, you either go straight up to center, half a yard, you basically jump over him, you're in for a touchdown. Or, like I said, open it up a little bit where you have two wide outs, a tight end, and two backs, and put somebody in motion. Something where you have options. Because what if I don't know what they allow Rippon to do or not to make a play change or whatever, but I'm just thinking when you have that big, that condensed of an area, everybody knows it's coming. And there's no, that's my only quibble with it. But I think there's a play was fine, but they could have had a better formation to run the same play.
By the way,
and could have been more successful.
By the way, on the year, Brett Rippon coming into the game had 72 yards rushing.
He did? Am I looking at the right year here?
I'm looking on Football Study Hall because they adjust for the sack totals.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's okay. That's a couple a game, five a game, right? Or
yeah, he had 25 rushes altogether, 72 yards, two touchdowns.
Okay. Okay.
So, I mean, like I said, if you're in that situation and you're asking your quarterback, your playmaker to get you 1 yard, I don't have a problem with that. Air Force just happened to make a play.
They made a lot of plays that game. Like I said, blocked field goal. Worthman's looking to be a pretty good QB. They did have that one pick on the trick play that didn't go their way for Air Force. The Tyler Williams throw. For some reason, they tried to do something with the wide receiver there. But I'm not trying to make this a down on Boise State. Like, all they lost the game. Air Force won the game and played well. They were, like I said, turnover, not turnover margin, but that's minus one, I believe, for Falcons. But the time of possession, or zero, I should say, because Rippon had the fumble that on that fourth down play. But, like, Air Force defense, like, they played well enough. Like, they only had three tackles for loss. They had no sacks. And so they weren't getting a ton of pressure. And I just look back at 9 of 26.
Yeah. And also, and 0 for his first eight.
Yeah. And then you got McNichols, who, it gets even worse because he had one run for 56 yards. I think, was that the first play of the game or something, the touchdown?
I believe it was. Yes.
I believe it's what it was.
More than 10 yards on the head on the ground.
Take that away, he was 21 for like 30, 32.
Yeah.
That's like a yard a carry.
Air Force won the game more than Boise State lost.
Oh, for sure. Yo, for sure. Boise made big plays because the touchdown, look at the passing yardage, yards per attempt, but Air Force just chipped away, did their thing. And this is the attack that I'd rather see them have. Because I think last week we mentioned that only Worthman had double-digit carries. He had 26. DJ Johnson had 17. Jacoby Owens had 12. Even McVay had 8 for 61. So they spread it out a little bit more than this is what their offense should be like, I should say. Where they get three guys in double-figure carries. Even Shane Davern had 8 carries and had a touchdown. So Air Force secondary showed up with Stillhammer, Lopato back there doing their thing. And Air Force is 9-3. There can be, I think, four teams that win 10 games as conference this year. Is that correct?
I believe that is correct. You would have,
and everybody's Boise, being pissy about it?
You'd have Boise, Air Force, assuming they win the bowl, San Diego State, and Wyoming.
They could all get 10 wins. It's pretty good.
And New Mexico.
Whoa.
Wait, right?
Are they
8-4?
I think they're 8-4. Let me double check. They're 8-4, yeah. Remember the Austin Rutgers and New Mexico State?
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay, and also one last thing on this game. I said this in the little video I did. Boise State fans, I know this is a minority because a lot of people pointed out to me this is not everybody. Hey, Matt, would you like to have a 10-2 season for Fresno State?
God, yes. Anybody who's complaining about a 10-win season right now should probably just be grateful for what they have. Like, look around the conference, really.
Yeah.
Just take a moment. Yeah. Look at the standings. Mm-hmm. Look at the rankings. Just be grateful for what you have. Because it can change drastically.
Okay, I can get being upset because you lost two close games you had chances to win. That's fine.
Yeah.
And that could put a damper on the season because, well, they had a reasonably good chance to go to the Cotton Bowl this year. But saying you want to fire Brian Harsin, no. Saying the season's worthless because you don't get to a big bowl game. Or I saw something from Bronco Nation News. They did it pretty well. State basically is kind of saying what we're saying. But then they say there's a disrespect factor. Because I don't think there's a disrespect factor. There's a factor you play in the Mountain West. Mm-hmm. And the bowl lineups, the Power 5, Pac-12, Big 10, ACC, they'd rather play each other in bowl games. And so it's not a Boise thing that people don't like Boise or disrespect. You can't get a better bowl game. You've got to put part of it on the league, which the champion gets a crappy sixth place Pac-12 team, which might be a 5-7 North Texas school this year, which is even worse to play your possible champ. But it's not disrespect of getting to a different bowl game. It's the conference fault and other leagues that don't want to play in the play a Mountain West team or an American team or a CUSA team.
Yeah.
But I would hope there could be some sort of better negotiating, which I don't know what they could really do in the bowl lineup. I'd have to look more into it, but I'm not sure how 5-7 Northwestern comes in because there's technically no back, or excuse me, North Texas. There's no backup for the Vegas Bowl.
Oh, well, I guess we'll find out about that, huh?
And I don't know where North Texas comes from. I need to see their 5-7. And then I don't know who they could play. I don't know. They could make a trade, maybe another Conference USA bowl game. Maybe there's somehow they could get, I know the bowl teams want their best teams in their own bowl game, but maybe somehow get La Tech to play in the Vegas Bowl. Something like that would be pretty interesting. Western Kentucky. I don't know how that could work, but why not try to get that type of team? Because how exciting would it be to see like Western Kentucky versus San Diego State? Two different offenses, slinging the ball through the Hilltoppers where the Aztecs run the ball a lot. That would be a pretty good game. La Tech, pretty good team. That would be fun to watch. North Texas, come on. And I'm pretty sure ABC doesn't like that prospect either because they're broadcasting the game.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing to keep in mind for Boise State fans is, like, when you look back at the season at the whole, you know, they went 3-2 in one score games. And being perfect is really hard. Mm-hmm. And it's not always going to happen, but when you are winning 9-10 games more often than you're not, chances are something is probably going right and you should just chill. It's hard to be perfect. That's all I'm going to say.
It's just disappointing, but I think they assumed a lot of them will come into the Mountain West and do what we did in the WAC. Yes, most of the WAC teams came over, like Hawaii, Nevada, Fresno, San Jose, Utah State. But Aztecs have finally brought it up for their coach and Brady Hoke, and then continuing with Rocky Long. And Utah State got better. It's just not that simple. And then you already had Air Force, who's always good. And Colorado State, we'll get this later, but I think, not kidding, not pandering, they might be the best team playing football right now in the conference.
We'll get to that.
That's a hot take, but I think that's not far out there, is it?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Next game. Where do you want to start Saturday? Is it the Fresno game you were at wearing your poncho, I think?
I was not wearing a poncho. I was wearing just a normal hoodie and jeans, you know?
Not a slicker?
I might have been the only person in the sparsely populated stadium that was not wearing a slicker. And
So what was the crowd like in this finale?
Well, you can go back on my Twitter feed. I know that I put a couple of pictures up right at kickoff. It was not good. Like, I've been charting the progression in, you know, the decline of the tailgating throughout the year. And like, when I showed up Saturday about 90 minutes before game time, it looked like, you know, you might go to like a neighborhood park and there were just a few families hanging out. And it was actually kind of depressing to see, but, you know, once the rain started coming down in this first, you know, at halftime especially, a lot of people bailed out, and it was really only the hardcore fans that stuck it out to the end. And I commend those people, especially those who did not run for cover, because there were, you know, maybe 100 of them that, you know, just basically took the brunt of it. And believe me, it was very cold and it was rainy. But, you know, what can you really say about this game? It was a lot of the same things that you would see in this Fresno State team all year long.
I kind of tuned. I saw a little bit. I did what I could to get tuned in this game. So I pulled up this kind of a little antidote on my side, I guess. I pulled up the CBS Sports app because I like that app the best because I think it's the most consistent and easy to use and not buggy. Mm-hmm. So I go to the quarterback play. I'm like, on Fresno, I'm like, let's look at some stats really quick. I don't see Zach Klein on there. I'm like, what is going on? What are they doing now? Apparently the app was being buggy for one time ever. And it was for some reason hovering back and forth, like trying to do a quick scroll up and down without me touching it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, it kind of freaked me out for me. Like, Zach Klein's not playing. No Jason Virgil. That's just my little side note I saw. But 16-14. For San Jose won the game-winning field goal. They kicked, what, 3 field goals in this game? Is that correct?
Yeah, they kicked all those field goals in the second half after the rain came down. It was basically a totally different game after halftime. Because Fresno State actually did hold a lead. You know, they were up 14.
Whoa.
Believe it or not. But, you know, it was basically two different games. You know, once the rain started falling, if you look at the second half totals especially, it's almost a complete reversal of what they did in the first half. Because, you know, in the first half, the running attack wasn't great for Fresno State. They only averaged maybe 3.2 yards per carry. But they held San Jose to 3.8 yards per carry. And I think that that in itself was kind of a promising development. And, you know, Zach Klein was able to find a couple of big plays on his first drive. You know, he had a big 53-yard catch and run to Keyshawn Johnson on a big third down. And then he found Aaron Peck for another big third down. But, I mean, after halftime, they only had 47 total yards of offense.
Do you know how far... The farthest they went in the second half on the yard line positioning for Fresno?
Off the top of my head, I do not, but I would guess it was probably like the 30. They're on 30.
Very close. The offense didn't get past their own 32-yard line in the second half.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, and once San Jose figured out that they could do pretty much what teams have been doing to Fresno State all year long, which is...
You mean play football against them?
You just line up and run at them. And when you look at Deontay Cooper especially, you know, you see that he had 26 carries and 126 yards. Between he and Kenny Potter, like, Potter didn't have a great day throwing the football. Some of that had to do with the elements. Some of that had to do with, you know, some of the pressure that he was feeling. You know, he was only 15 of 25, 111 yards and a touchdown through the air. But on the ground, you know, he and Cooper combined for nearly 200 yards. And a significant amount of that came after halftime, you know, and that's basically what opponents have been doing to this team all year long. Like, they had 180 yards after halftime, and 169 of them were rushing yards.
Why didn't Fresno run the ball? Because we know San Jose State's rush defense is pretty awful as well. What was up with how was that thwarted?
Oh, you mean besides the fact that they just can't run the ball?
I'm just saying, I figured I could fall over and get 10 yards against this San Jose defense.
I mean, you might think, but I honestly don't have an answer. They just look totally disorganized. And especially did you happen to catch the last drive?
I did not see that part. No, I was driving at that point.
Yeah, so, I mean, the last drive more or less kind of encapsulates how the season has gone. Because, you know, on first down, they're backed up to their own 5-yard line, and, you know, Klein is flushed out of the pocket and he has to throw it away. Now, second down is just like a complete misfire down the field. You know, third down, I wish I could even remember these plays, but basically, like,
I have it right here. They complete pass on first down.
And then
completed pass to the 18.
Yeah, and then I think he was
a loss of one sack, maybe.
And then, you know, the last play was a fumbled snap.
Same. Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Look where
that is your 2016 Fresno State football team.
Yeah, that is more or less how it went. And, you know, there's no sugarcoating it. It's the worst season this team has had ever.
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 Their only win was Sac State.
They're the only team in the FBS to have not beaten another FBS team this year. And,
oh, boy.
You know, it's hard to think that they're going to be much worse, but believe me, the rebuilding is going to be long and it's going to be painful, and there's no guarantees for it. And so, you know, for all the other Fresno State fans out there, you're just going to have to kind of buckle up and see what happens from here, because there's honestly nowhere to go but up.
And then this also includes their future schedules. We'll get to this offseason stuff later, like down the road, but we've seen their schedule. They have was it 6 straight games or something in Southern California on the road? Something like that.
Years. But, I mean, even looking forward to just next year, they have back-to-back road games and non-conference play against Alabama and Washington.
Yeah. And if I'm correct, I think they have one home game out of a stretch of, like, I did the math before. I looked at the schedule, but I think, isn't it Minnesota that comes to town? That's about it. Everything else is road versus Power 5 teams.
Yeah. Minnesota is the only Power 5 team coming to Fresno for the end of the decade.
Because they play like Oregon, Alabama, USC, UCLA.
Yeah.
I think they have a return game to Utah, I want to say, or maybe that's already done. But Colorado, I think they go to Colorado. It's a geez. But real quick, we'll briefly mention this recruiting news really quick because Jeff Tedford's now officially the head coach now. Eric Kiesau, I assume he's not sticking around.
To be determined.
Okay, yeah, TBD. So they picked up a JUCO quarterback, George Arena, out of West LA College. And you just said this is the third quarterback they have in the 2017 class?
Yeah, they under DeRuiter, they committed Mark Salazar out of Rancho Bernardo, which is down south, and Cameron Burston from Contra Costa Community College up in the Bay Area. So now Reyna is going to be the third quarterback that they have coming into this class, assuming that they don't reshuffle, renege on some of these commitments, and assuming that they don't pull the scholarship offers, because, you know, obviously all these guys were DeRuiter's guys. So that's a lot of that is to be determined over the next couple months.
Did the other JUCO guy sign? Because Reyna is going to be a mid-year signee. He's going to come in January.
You know what? Honestly, I don't pay that much attention to recruiting, so I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
But I mean,
I'll look and see what you're talking here.
But to me, I think it's telling that Tedford's very first commitment is a quarterback.
From his hometown, no less.
His hometown. Because, you know, Klein is going to be leaving. You know, Virgil, apparently, like, there are rumors going around that he may be looking to transfer. I don't know how much.
I wouldn't blame him. I don't know. I would not blame him.
In fact, that would have, but I guess, you know, that's something to keep an eye out for. But even behind him, Christian Rossi, the other community guy, college guy they brought in last year, apparently he's considering like some kind of sport change. He might play baseball next year or something like that. As a true freshman, he redshirted this year. So honestly,
a lot of quarterbacks.
There is a lot of quarterbacks. I honestly don't know what this quarterback situation is going to look like. And I made the obvious joke. I was like, they better bring in like six offensive linemen. They're going to bring in this many quarterbacks, because right now they only have one guy as an offensive lineman that they have committed. So they could bring in all the quarterbacks that they want, but you know, they need to bring in guys to keep those guys upright too.
Yeah. Really quick. Burston is a JUCO guy, like you said, but right now I'm looking at a scout over Barkboard, still say he's a verbal commit. So at least Reyna right now is going to come mid season. So that commit could change. Cause I think the JUCO signing period is our early signing period for JUCO guys. I think it's going to be ending pretty soon, so maybe he'll just sign in February. I don't know, but he's not officially in yet. So we know Reyna's in at midseason, which could give him the leg up if you come in during spring football. So,
yeah, I guess we'll see. But you know, Tedford's already on the move, so I guess that's something to keep an eye out for.
And now let's get to the San Jose State side.
Yeah.
Ron Carragher, a little bit of a surprise. He's out as head coach.
Yeah, good recruiter. You know, I think he's brought in a lot of promise, but you know, results on the field matter too. And when you consider that he never quite lived up to the standard that Mike McIntyre established before him, you know, like I said, if it were me, I would have given him the one more year to see what happens, but I understand why the move is made now.
Well, part of it, he had a lot of talent because he has guys in the NFL. I know Ben Abin-Wickery with the Panthers got cut recently, but multiple guys get drafted. Tyler Irvin's with the Texans. David Fells has been or is with the Bears, some practice squad or something. Had talent and couldn't do much with it.
Yeah.
Their rush defense was a joke for years. Mm. Their red zone offense, me and Chris joked last year, like, why even go within the red zone? Just pass it from 25 yards out, because they got stuck anytime they got in the red zone, despite having Tyler Irvin on the roster. And so he's had talent there, and it's just not producing.
And they nearly got Kenny Potter killed week in and week out this year.
Yeah, that too.
He deserves probably a Medal of Honor or something for surviving the season.
He should get something, man. And also the hire was just interesting because do you know where his prior coaching job was at?
Yeah, he was at San Diego after Jim Harbaugh.
Do you know what level San Diego Toreros play college football at?
I do not.
They're not only FCS, they are non-scholarship FCS football.
Huh.
So Jim Harbaugh going to Stanford was a big deal back then. making the jump. And we questioned it before. I'm like, that's a big jump. He did well, but maybe he learned a lot from Harbaugh sticking around there. But he was at Kentucky before, UCLA, various positions. But
see, to me, I think that the gamble in retrospect made sense just because, first of all, they weren't, it's not going to cost him that much to get rid of him. He only made, I think, like $550,000 last year or something like that.
Not a ton.
And like I said, he did have a lot of success in the FBS level. Like he was, you know, 3-time co-champion of the Pioneer Football League when he was down there. So I think those kinds of gambles make sense in the same way that, you know, bringing Bobby Houck to UNLV made sense. Like they needed to try something outside of the box. And there was a guy who had success. Sure. And, you know.
And with a guy who had success as well, yeah, too.
So. And I mean, like Bill Connolly always says, making good hires is hard. And it's hard to follow up one great hire like you had with McIntyre with another one like Carragher. So, you know, maybe it didn't work out, but I hope that Spartans fans will be a little bit kind to him because they were, you know, they had some moments where they were okay. And, you know, whoever the next guy is coming in, he's going to have some interesting pieces to work with. Like he's got, I think, a promising QV in Josh Love. They got a couple of interesting receivers in Justin Holmes and Trey Hartley. And they have, you know, some pieces on the defense too, like, you know, Maurice McKnight, if he comes back, or Frank Ginda, Ethan Aguayo, these guys who've gotten a lot of run on this, you know, rebuilding defense.
Well, even Dante Cooper, the running back, yeah, freshman, doing quite well.
So, I mean, he brought all those guys in. So I think that whoever the next coach is, it's going to be incumbent on him to, you know, take that foundation and make San Jose State a more competitive team again.
All right, let's get to this real quick. Campus Insiders came out with their list of 5 coaches.
Yes.
So I'm not going to give you the school name. Do you know who Alex Grinch is?
Alex who?
Grinch.
I do not.
He's with Washington State.
Okay.
Defensive coordinator for Washington State. So it's kind of an odd, interesting choice they'd go there. So, yeah, you got him. He did improve. They mentioned here the defense over at Wazoo and Pullman dropped 11 points under his watch from 38 to 27. So maybe that's something. He's in the area, sort of. Pete Kwiatkowski, yes.
The Washington defensive coordinator, right?
Correct.
I feel like that would be a good hire for them.
That could be good. Tim Drevino.
Michigan OC.
He served as offensive line coach at San Jose back in 99. Yes, branch off of Jim Harbaugh, blah, blah, blah. Niners, Stanford, now at Michigan. So he's only 47. Could be this could be sort of like you mentioned, Lane Fickell's getting a look at is it FAU? Is that correct?
Yes.
The Ohio State DC. That could be a similar move there. Tim Drevino. That would be, I'd like that hire. That'd be good. Multiple locations, NFL guy as well. And this one made me laugh out loud. What coach would you think that would be mentioned? I'll give you a clue. He's a former coach within one of the teams in the conference, okay, within the past decade and has had
One conference championships. Oh, man.
At least one, I believe.
Oh, okay. Not Tim DeRuiter, I hope.
Not on this list, no. As I mentioned, this list.
This list.
He has not coached in about a year or two.
Okay, I'm drawing a blank. Why don't you just tell me?
June Jones.
Interesting.
The guy who quit SMU midseason.
I think that's more interesting than you might think. I mean, I think we probably end up on opposite sides of this.
I don't doubt what he's done, but when you quit midseason, I don't want to bring you to coach my program.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can understand that. But I mean,
so and then so what are your thoughts on Jones? And he's 63, so he's up there.
I mean, he's, yeah, like I said, that's the kind of like short term hire that you use to find stability for a program. And when you think about it, that's kind of what he did in landing at SMU, where he came.
He did good.
He was 1-11 his first year there back in 2008, And he got them to bowls in his next 4 years there. And they, you know, they slipped a little bit before, like you said, he resigned two games into 2014.
Really? Don't use resign. Use quit.
Okay, well, I'm looking at.
He quit. At, okay, two games. Come on.
I'm
man.
Looking at Wikipedia and it says resigned. Don't blame me. I'm just reading.
I'm just saying, if it's two games in, I'll call. You can call me out, but come
okay,
on.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. But I mean, you know, he's the guy that, you know, when he went to Hawaii, he found them in kind of dire straits, but he made them interesting and he made them competitive.
And winners.
Yeah. And then, you know, he wasn't quite able to reach the same ceiling at SMU, but he made them relevant for the first time in a long time. And when I think if you're San Jose State, it's interesting just because, you know, he's a guy who has that track record, but he's probably not a long-term solution at this point. So look, kind of, you know, what you're going to get with him, which I think is kind of interesting. Like, you know, you're going to probably get the run and shoot offense and all that kind of stuff, which worked at SMU. And I think that, you know, if they recruit well for a year or two, it could possibly work again.
I think depth.
That's good.
Good points there,
but he's not going to go for another program. He's not a guy who's going to be there for 3 years and go to Stanford or UCLA or something like that. So, you know, if you're going to lose him, it's probably to retirement.
Yeah.
And then the last name, I like this name as well, Jake Spavital.
I like that name too.
So he's at Cal right now. And so run the Bear Raid offense, passing attack. Probably has to, would he have to move Berkeley to San Jose? Is that a big drive?
About an hour and a half with traffic. Let's not too bad.
So those are the names that they came up with. So I like that name probably the best out on the list.
I wish Fresno had gotten any one of those guys. Except for me.
Even June Jones. Would you take June Jones over Jeff Tedford?
At least June Jones would be more interesting.
I'll give you that too. I'd be a toss up. I might lean a little toward Jones, but I'm just not a June Jones fan. So I know he's done good things, but it depends what San Jose wants. I get it. If you bring in like Spavital or Drevno, they may come for a couple years and move on to a better coaching gig in 3 years. And that's always the case. So you can't be, here's the thing too. You can't be afraid to make a hire because you think a guy may leave in a couple years. Yeah. You got to find the right hire for your team now.
It's true.
And if he does well, I know, like you said, it's hard to get two hires in a row, but if he goes 3 years, wins 8 or 9 games a year, average, something like that, 4 years, wins 35 games, 38 games, your job is attractive to somebody else. It's not like this case where you're not a good team. You got to have rebuilding, because rebuilding is hard. If you come into a situation like, we're assuming PJ Fleck's gone from Western Michigan, going into there, yeah, it'll be tough, but you already have guys in place. So look at Toledo. They lost, Jason Campbell to Iowa State. They're doing just fine with promoting from within. And so that's the thing as well. Even with June Jones, if he does go there, he has a couple of good years, he retires or whatever happens in 4 or 5 years, and he does well, you're more attractive instead of having to find, be creative, or look for a high school coach or something. That it could work out like UNLV it has, but you can be more selective if you're a winning program that needs a new coach. All right, so one thing really quick we didn't mention, just a quick second here, back for the first game, Brian Harsin getting some mention to Oregon, maybe.
Oh, yeah, I did read about that.
So, and I don't appreciate people retweeting things and say, just because the name's mentioned in an article doesn't mean he's going after them. Well, sir, who you know who you are if you're listening, probably not on Twitter. People close to the situation said Oregon has names, including PJ Fleck and Brian Harsin, they're considering if they need a new head coach. For me, that's enough to go with, say, they're looking at him. So, whatever. I know what's going on here. I know what I'm doing. I'm not just throwing crap out there just because I want to. If I did that, I would be random people who... I'd be a fake news guy on the internet, yeah, exactly. Right? Making lots of money.
Probably get paid a lot more, yeah.
No kidding. All right, next game. This show is going to be a bit longer, folks. We're already only in 3 games, and we have some non-conference games to get to. Nevada at UNLV.
Fremont Cannons blue.
45-10. Did you know this is Brian Poling's largest margin of victory?
I did not know that.
That's what it mentioned in the press release or something I read, but people were saying, I talked to you yesterday about this, people were telling me he's gone no matter what during the game. They figured it'd come Monday. But you know what's interesting? Do you buy mutually parted ways?
I do not.
Neither do I.
That seems like administrative speak.
It's probably wording toward what they're going to pay you for not coaching next year.
Yeah, that too.
Because they fire you outright, you'll get your buyout regardless, even if it's for cause, essentially. So maybe they, like, all right, we'll say, instead of saying we're firing you, we're parting ways, but you'll get X amount of money instead. And I'm guaranteeing they paid them more money to say this than to say, no, I'm going to stick in it to fire
him. Well, you know, at least his team brought him out on a high note.
Yeah, I got the Cannon Blue before it was dry. He had a team meeting at 1 o'clock Pacific today, on Sunday, I should say, depending when you're listening, to say, sorry, guys, I'm out of here. So, as for the game itself, this was a UNLV is just a weird team. They beat Wyoming in triple overtime with their third-string quarterback, like whatever you want to consider Kurt Ballendeck, not the starter. And Charles Williams had a tough game. Ballendeck led the team in rushing. But this is all Nevada, and they just took care of business. Like, James Butler, hey, James Butler showed up. Ty Gagey showed up running the ball.
But this was by far his best game of the year.
Sure, yeah.
You know, 196 yards on the ground. You know, he actually led, you know, the team with 5 catches for 48 yards and a touchdown through the air. So he scored 4 times in total. And when you're doing that, at the same time where the Rebels really were struggling to find any kind of offensive traction, you know, if you, again, look at the third down comparisons, Nevada was 8 of 13, which is really good. And UNLV was only 1 of 12, which is really bad. And I mean, it's hard to fault them too much just because, you know, we've talked at length about the fact that they're missing so many wide receivers. You know, the receivers have been banged up, or the running backs have been banged up, rather. You know, they're down to their, you know, second/third/who-knows quarterback.
Yeah. Don't Sneed had a trick play. It didn't go well at all. Yeah. Some sort of pass back.
And so I think that kind of those kinds of things really add up. So, I mean, I think it was someone at one of the newspapers in Vegas wrote this thing about, this is like a terrible thing for UNLV. It's like, dude, chill. They lost like 72 receivers this year.
Yes. It's like the Boise thing. You can be disappointed by how you lost, but look at what's happening around you to why you're losing like that. And it is disappointing. You beat Wyoming in triple overtime, scoring 60 points, over 60. Then you lose to a Nevada team who's 5-7 now. So I can get the emotions and everything, but you're right. Look at the situation. Look at who you're playing at quarterback. Look at Charles Williams, who's probably not fully healthy, rushed 9 for 48. I don't even know who these receivers are. David Green, I heard of him. Jericho Flowers moved from defense to offense. Like I said, Sneed, former QB. Who knows what he'll be going forward. He's had the one-trick play, didn't catch a pass, playing wide receiver. It was a tough game. Like I was watching this game. Every time I turned up to watch, it seemed like UNLV was punting the ball almost every time.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's kind of hard to feel, you know, too angry about it just because of the fact that, you know, despite the lopsided result, on the whole, I feel like this team has made progress. Like, they'll be missing some, you know, key pieces going forward on the offensive line, but at least you know they can run the football. And, you know, once the wide receivers get healthy, I think that the experience that they got throughout the year this year will be useful for them. You know, maybe, you know, Mekhi Stevenson only had 16 yards. You know, maybe, you know, the guys that they brought in, like, I'm trying to figure out who which of these guys are like receivers and which ones are like running backs and stuff like that. In the long run, I think they'll probably be fine, but I think, you know, credit to Nevada, of course, for, you know, taking that strength away from them one way or another. Like, I think this is what, their worst running performance of the season for the Rebels.
I'm not sure. They averaged five yards a carry, which is pretty good. They just didn't have enough of it.
And I mean, when you put the ball in Palandek's hands, like, you know, not every week is going to be Wyoming week. So, yeah.
And then also another positive, you got Xavier Campbell playing more carries this week. All the receivers who are injured, they're all younger guys, so they got significant playing time this year. And so that's going to help going forward as well, where they had, instead of, say, UNLV made a bowl game because they're healthy, which would have been a distinct possibility, you get a week or two of practices after. But they got actual real game time from guys who probably would have seen a third of the playing time overall had everybody been healthy.
And I mean, and they made a few stops on defense too. Like, obviously it was probably an afternoon to forget overall, but they did force the Wolfpack to kick three field goals too. And I think that, you know, you don't want to lean too much on moral victories or anything like that.
So it could have been worse, you're saying.
I mean, it could have been worse, but they played hard. And that's, you know, when you're a rebuilding team that's suffered from a lot of, you know, bad injury luck, really that's kind of all you can ask for if you're a fan. And I think that there's still a lot to look forward to in the desert.
And there is. If you look at it, Ty Ganji is a sophomore. I think Ty Ganji done pretty well. Assuming James Butler, I don't see him going to the NFL, but he... if he comes back, he probably considered the, well, everybody's coming back maybe, but all the junior running backs, mm-hmm. he'd be one of the top backs returning. And so there's stuff to look forward to as well. Like, we'll get off-season stuff. We'll dive more deeper into it, but they have stuff to look forward to as well, even with the new head coach. And really quick, Chris Murray outdid himself at the Reno Gazette Journal. 16 potential coaching candidates.
So, okay. So instead of going through the whole thing, like, what is one or two of them that we haven't mentioned already? Because there's, you know, guys like Kwiatkowski and June Jones that are mentioned in this list too. What is the one guy on this list that is most interesting to you?
I'll play your game. I'll play my game next because I have a laugh track I want to play in a moment here on some of these guys. I would say the most interesting. There's a lot of names on here. I looked through most of this, but it depends what you want. Like, Doug Nussmeier would be interesting, but Florida's offense is terrible, so I'd probably stay away from him. Yeah, but I think Bo Pelini would be the most interesting name on this list.
Okay, so why do you say that?
Well, he Nebraska ran him out of town while he was doing quite well there.
Yeah,
And so that's one of my main things. Like, he has the best outside of Chris Aldridge mentioned as well, which he's basically saying not going to happen because he's 70. I think he's still hanging out in Europe teaching kids to play taco football in Italy. But Pelini, if you look at experience wise, and what is Youngstown State right now, is in the playoffs right now, I believe. Mm-hmm.
I believe you're correct.
It says here, I don't know what the results were because those first round games were over the weekend, unless they've got a bye, but he's the most experienced coach and has won quite well at a big program. It does beg the question, like, if he comes to Nevada, then gets another job in a couple of years. But again, you can't be afraid of that. He would be probably the most safe pick, but also, now I'm not just saying safe because, oh, it's a guy who'll lead the program fine, but he's won and done well. And he's not a guy who got fired, got burned in Nebraska, and was an OC trampled around. He's a head coach at an FCS program. Not many people want to do that. No fanfare, not much of anything, even though Youngstown State, pretty good program at the FCS level, he's not getting media blitz if he's a coordinator at a pretty good program, like a mid-level Power 5, like wherever, Texas A&M or something like that. You know what I mean? He's not at that level. And so I think this would be, if they can get him, that'd be a great pick. There's other guys I like as well, probably more upside to him, but I think if you look at what ADs want, presidents want, he fits pretty much everything.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. If it were me, unless you want to switch gears to your game.
Well, hold on. I'll pick another guy too. I just looking through. I didn't notice Pliny before. Another guy who I'd like is I have a soft spot for Major Applewhite.
Okay.
Just because I'm a former UT guy or a UT fan, and he got screwed. I think I mentioned this before. Screwed against for the last name of Sims getting quarterback started before him. Texas could have another national title if it were not for whoever the head coach was putting in Sims over Applewhite. But Applewhite's done stuff at Syracuse, at Houston, but he might go with Tom Herman to UT. And so I like Applewhite or Bo Baldwin of Eastern Washington. Those would probably be off the cuff kind of the guys I'd want to go right away. But Andy Bue also at Maryland, former Wolfpack player and coach. That could be a good fit as well. That might be the most easiest pick to get to bring into town.
Can I just speak from experience? Like, you don't want to go down that road, Nevada.
Which road, Andy?
You need a Nevada guy at Nevada road.
Oh no, I'm not saying you need that, but I'm saying that would be he's been away enough to, I think it'd be okay to bring him back. I'm not saying number one requirement, but it would be a It'd be a good fit. It'd be a good pick as well. Former guy. That does help in some areas.
I mean, if it were me, like the one guy I would seriously consider talking to and looking close at is Bo Baldwin. You know, because to me, he strikes me as kind of a Craig Bull kind of guy. Maybe, you know, Eastern Washington hasn't been quite as successful as North Dakota State was, but if you...
Blood field.
Yeah. But I mean, if you look at what he's done basically since 2012, like he, of course, he won a national championship in 2010. But even since then, like he's won 10 games in four of the last five seasons, including this year.
Wazoo. He beat him this year.
So if you're an event fan who doesn't have anything to do in the next couple of weeks, I would consider trying to tune in to the FCS playoffs and see what his team looks like. Because he's a guy that's won a lot at that level. And I feel like that's the kind of medium cost, high reward hire that the Wolfpack could really benefit from. Because he runs a quarterback friendly offense, and you have a quarterback now in Ty Ganji who can, you know, throw a little and run a little. And, you know, when you think about what, you know, Baldwin is able to do with a guy like, for example, Vernon Adams was a guy that was under his tutelage before he went to Oregon last year.
There you go.
I think that that would be a really interesting hire for them, and it wouldn't cost a lot the same way that, you know, Bo Pelini would. Like, I don't know if you happen to see on Twitter the comments that Brian Polian made about how much Nevada invests in the program on his way out the door.
Not much.
Yeah.
So, sounds very similar to Bobby Houck kicking UNLV on his way out.
Yeah. So I think that...
Which he's not wrong about either. So
I think that that would be a very interesting hire for them if they're looking for a guy who knows how to run an offense, who's had a lot of winning experience, especially recently, who's a young guy, an offensive mind. He's the kind of guy I wrote about as, you know, I wish Fresno State had taken a longer look at him. Let's put it that way.
Dude, I wish Fresno State took a look at anybody. Yeah. More than 10, you know what I mean? Like more than a week.
I feel like he's going to get an FBS job at some point. And I think that Nevada would be a pretty good landing spot for him. So like I said, Wolfpack fans, pay attention in the next couple weeks if you can, because I think that he's a guy that I would pay a lot of attention to.
And also, just to coach sheet, to salary wise, Polian made $575K. That was a ninth in the league. Yeah. And so pay him about $500,000, or excuse me, eighth in the league, because Rolovich is a little bit less than that, $400K. But give him $500,000. They had Polian had bonus up to $250,000, so he could get up to nearly $800,000. So you could easily get him for not on the cheap, but in the same price range of Polian.
Mm-hmm.
And then can I give you my laughter names? Do I have a laugh track on this thing? dang it! I wish I had a sad trombone or something. I wonder if there's a something else here. Nope, I won't mess with that. But okay, here's names I laugh at. Tim DeRuiter.
Yeah.
He did coach at Nevada for a couple of years, so there's that. My other name, I don't know how this guy has a job, but Andy freaking Ludwig at Vanderbilt.
We've talked about him before. You do not like him, but continue.
No. The first line from Murray is Ludwig was Utah's OC from 05 to 08, which here's the connection, because the AD, Newth, was at Utah as well in the administration during that time. He does note this. Ludwig guided Utah's offense to number 2 national rankings in the poll before going to Cal. However, I will give all the credit to Brian Johnson to lead that offense because he made the calls. But he went to Cal. He went to San Diego State. He's been at Wisconsin. He's bounced around. There's a reason he's not got a head coaching job. He's always an OC. He does good enough, but he just does quirky things. Like I mentioned before, I know a guy who played under him. He was a center in one of those years where, all right, 3rd and 1. You should run up the middle, most likely. Something simple. Let's try and end around like a jet sweep reverse or something and a throw. Like, it's like, I mentioned this before, if you ever watch Waterboy, the Henry Winkler character tries to outthink himself.
So
I'll pretend to fake and fake here. And he's that type of coach. He does good enough, but he just makes odd choices. And I know I'm probably biased a little bit against it, but I've seen him up close and what he can do. And he's just does good enough. I don't know if I trust him with overseeing the entire program.
That's fair.
All right, let's move on. We're going way too long. Anybody else you want to add or anything else in that list? Or
no, I think I'm all set. Let's keep going.
Yeah, we're almost at an hour already. We got
to
hustle.
Let's get to the really interesting stuff.
Next
Colorado
game.
State, San Diego State.
Oh yeah, we haven't gotten to the big game. So as I mentioned before, is it far fetched for me to say the Rams are the best team currently in the conference?
When you drop 63 points on the conference's best defense, like the Rams did Saturday, I think that's a pretty fair assessment. 63-31, the Rams.
Not even close.
Ran away with it literally.
Yes. Oh, man. 63-31. They scored 21-21, 14-7. This, like, the Rams couldn't, or the Aztecs couldn't tackle to save their lives. They had another big running game, like Izzy Matthews, Dalen Dawkins combined for over 200 yards. Marvin McKenzie, 61. Nick Stevens threw just enough, 10 of 15, four first half touchdown passes.
On 10 completions.
Yeah, he was 9 of 10 last week.
Yeah, and I mean, and a lot of that came down to Michael Gallup, too, where I think I mentioned specifically, you know, this is a lot the same as the Wyoming matchup. And Gallup answered the bell with 7 catches, 139 yards, and 3 touchdowns. And that was the vast majority of that, you know, Stevens' production. There was basically one guy, and it was really kind of remarkable to see him put up those kinds of numbers.
Oh, not going to say anything. You see the photo that came through?
I did not.
Don't say anything, but just look. Uh-huh. You see it?
Yes.
Congratulations, that's all we'll say. You know who you are.
All right. Very nice, very nice.
Did you see those that came? Okay, let's move on. We'll talk later about that. All right, so where were we? Yeah, Rams are pretty good. Yes.
That's the good way of putting it.
But they held Pumphrey to 53 yards, 2.9 a carry, long of 11. Also, the Rams beat the Aztecs at their own game with a special teams touchdown, which, watching that kick return, I don't know how that happened because it was a very good punt. The guy, who was it? What's his name who returned it? Not Clark, Robert Ruiz. He basically kind of weaved and dashed part of the way, then found the hole down the middle, crushed downfield and did his thing and beat him that way. But Aztecs, like, Christian Chapman looked pretty good throwing the ball at times. Like, he had to make some throws. He was 11 of 19. A couple of TDs, but Rams are just dominant. They did not let up at all. They did their thing.
Yeah, and I mean, especially in the second half, too, like, San Diego State had, you know, 3 straight drives where they weren't able to do anything with it. Like, they had an interception, which was Chapman's only interception of the game. And then they turned it over on downs on their own side of the field. And then, you know, they had a fumble. And then Colorado State was able to turn all 3 of those into touchdowns, which I think is really just kind of astounding when you really think about how well this defense has played. And I mean, I don't think it's as simple as the fact that good quarterbacks beat this team. I feel like something just systematically went wrong. I mean, I don't know that you could put the blame on one guy or another or one exploited matchup. This just seems like a total collapse because, you know, looking at the total numbers, like, you know, Colorado State, 8 of 12 on third down. They had over 500 yards of total offense. Ran the ball for almost 300 yards. I don't know really what else you could say besides that. They averaged over 8 yards a play, which I'm pretty sure is far and away like the most that San Diego State has given up all season long.
Has to be. And there was weather issue. There was some rain in there, but there's nothing, like you said, there wasn't one area. This is just a dominant performance. Rams needed the first time passing the ball, got a first down. Need to run the ball, we got it. Pumphrey's going to run the ball? No, you're getting 1.5 yards on this play. They had a special teams TD, and so for the Aztecs as well. But this is just a game where they took advantage. They scored a touchdown off of Aztecs interception, like you mentioned. They had the special team score. It's basically a touchdown to punt, and you can't win that way.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, back to my question, do you think they're the best team in the conference right now, playing the best?
Oh, man. I mean, who is the other logical argument? Like, it would, like, another argument could be for Air Force because they're the only team that's
could be
beaten Colorado State down the stretch.
Aren't have the Air Force won four in a row? I want to
yes,
say
yes, they have. Yeah,
yeah. Air Force won four
they've
in a row.
Really,
Aztec
really rebounded from their mid-season lull with a vengeance.
Yeah, Rams have won 4 or 5. Air Force game is 49-46. Yeah.
Maybe, you know, you could maybe make an argument for New Mexico, which we'll get to in a minute, because they've won, you know, what, 6 of the last 7 or something like that. But yeah, Colorado State is definitely in the mix because they've basically been annihilating people the last, you know, month or so.
They're doing very good. So not to get, we're not, no, I'll save this talk for later, but like I said, they're very good. A lot of people coming back. Marty English turned around the defense. Mike Bobo is running the ball very well with his running backs, and there'll be a fun quarterback issue in the offseason because Nick Stevens playing well, Colin Hill, the ACL, say he's going to be back for spring. So I'll can I say this right now? Mm-hmm. Is it, I'm going to put a hot take right now out there.
Okay.
Can I make my stupid upset pick for next year?
Yes.
Rams win the conference next year.
I'm holding you to that.
Let's do it. Just like your spreadsheet you had, you sent out today, I think the Rams have a very good chance to win the conference next year.
I don't disagree, but I will reserve my judgment until...
Of course. Until, yes, until obviously. Until next August. It's still November. It's not even December yet.
This might be, you know what though, if it comes through for you, it's going to be the stupid upset pick to end all stupid upset picks.
Yes. Yeah, let's just move on because we got to hurry along here. Wyoming at New Mexico, the other game. New Mexico 56, Wyoming 35.
Oh boy.
Yeah, do you think there's any letdown because with Boise losing, Wyoming was guaranteed to win the division? Do you think anything played into that?
Maybe. I mean, it's
don't ever admit it.
Yeah, of course you never want to admit it. And I mean, obviously it's not going to probably be the overriding factor, but I think that when you know that you're kind of like locked into your situation, it's not like Wyoming by any stretch was going to be a serious contender for example, the New Year's Eve Bowl or the New Year's Day Bowl if they won the game. So I think, you know, some of that may have come into play, maybe unconsciously at a minimum. You know, some of it may have to do with the fact that, you know, some of these injuries are really piling up. Like, this was their first game without Chase Appleby in the middle of that defensive line, first of all.
That too, yeah.
And, you know, maybe some of it is just running into a hot opponent. Because when you consider what New Mexico's done over the last month and what they did again last night, it was basically just trucking Wyoming over and over and over again. 46 carries as a team for New Mexico. 568 yards and 7 touchdowns.
12 yards a carry.
12.3 yards per carry.
Yeah.
That
they average.
That's like twice their season average, isn't it? Like, and their season average is like among the best in the country.
I think they're top 3 rushing offense.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was just kind of a ridiculous performance. I mean, you kind of have to feel bad for Wyoming for the fact that they weren't able to stop them at all. Like, I'm looking at the chunk plays.
Every play was a chunk play.
Right? They had, what, 15 plays of more than 10 yards on the ground? And then to...
690 total yards.
And then to add insult to injury, you know, Lamar Jordan was 4 for 5 for 122 yards and a touchdown throwing the football.
Would you want to know their average yard per snap?
I'm looking at it right now. It was 13 and a half.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
Brian Hill, like they did their best. 35 points is pretty good. Like Josh Allen did pretty well. 18 to 28, 248. Brian Hill had 3 touchdowns, tied a career high, 126 yards on the ground. Tanner Gentry is making plays. There's just a couple overthrows by Allen that, not that it make, I don't think, too much of a difference, but there were, man, this, Lobos are good. Like, my man, Terry Gibson, 217 yards on the ground.
Wyoming had 6 tackles for loss. Let's not lose that.
So there were 6 negative plays, 7 if you count the incomplete pass, and they still averaged 13 yards per snap.
Yes.
What are, we played Madden here, Tecmo Bowl? What's going on?
And they sacked Josh Allen 3 times.
Hey.
I mean, this was basically just kind of like the, what, the 100th percentile New Mexico performance. Like, we've seen flashes of this. You know, obviously, if you go back to the Air Force game, for instance, you know, they basically demolished the Falcons, especially in that first half. This was just kind of the first time that they did it on the whole. And by the way, they are the number one rushing offense in the conference. Or in the, not in the conference, in the country.
Oh, nation?
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. I figure they're close.
By yards per carry, they just got ahead of South Florida. So, yeah, I mean, not much more that you can say besides the fact that, you know, New Mexico really hit their stride at the right time. And that's, you know, Bob Davey has them
football
in a place where nobody would have expected 5 years ago. Like, the fact that they're 8-4 with the possibility of, you know, probably post, you know, hosting a home bowl game with a chance at 9 wins. That's like really shocking when you think about where they were like at the turn of the decade. Like, they were one of the worst teams in the country. And it's really kind of a commendment to, you know, what the job that Davey and his staff has done to really put this team back together. And, you know, even if they aren't always the best team, they are definitely the most dangerous team in this conference week to week.
Oh, for sure. Like, I tell people all the time, like, I brag about it, but I was a little bit early, but I told people off season heading into last year, watch out for New Mexico. Even when they nearly beat Boise State year one, watch out for New Mexico. Their offense is unique. It's very good to watch. It's very different. It's pistol. It's diamond. It's option. It's a veer. It's read option. Watch their offense. It's so unique that they can hang with anybody, and look what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's just a, I don't even know the last time they had 9 wins. Because there's a reason Rocky Long left the program, who was an alum, saying there's not, he said, there's nothing more I can do here in Albuquerque.
That's kind of harsh, but yeah.
It's harsh, and Bob Davey had him on the verge. They are technically tri-champions of the Mountain Division. They were one game away last year from winning the division last year.
By the way, to answer your question, by the way, the last time they won 9 games was in 2007.
Yep, 07. I just noticed that. Yeah, I was looking up just now. And they've only done it twice since, every 10 years almost. 97, 07, 16, maybe. They've only won 10 games once ever back in 82. So maybe next year, Lobos. Maybe next year. All right, so let's move on to the next game on the list here. Is that Utah State, BYU?
Yes, it is.
Aggies made this interesting game for a while.
I did not happen to catch this game. Why don't you fill me in and our listeners in on?
I saw enough of it because I was flipping back and forth between Wyoming and this game. BYU got up, Utah State actually got up first to field goal. Also, no shocker, no Devontae Mays. Oh my goodness, are you watching Sunday Night Football?
No, I'm not.
Just real quick, I don't know what happened, but overtime, 2 field goals have been made. Somebody just missed a field goal with 1:03 left in OT.
Oh, no.
I think Denver missed it. Sorry. Yeah, Denver missed it. So they scored 3 field goal each, and this was a hooked it left. All right, let's move on. Sorry. I just happened to look up. I'm like, overtime NFL? That's interesting. 28-10 was the final. Utah State's defense did okay for a while, but Jamal Williams came back healthy. Like I said, Devontae Mays didn't play at all for Utah State, so that hurts the rushing a lot.
Yeah.
And this is basically a game where it was 14-10 at the half where Aggies were in position, but BYU just pounded away touchdown, touchdown, third and fourth quarter. Jamal Williams, 7 yards a carry. Taysom Hill didn't do all that great, 10-21 throwing the ball. He did leave 2 picks. So Aggies had chances, 2 interceptions. They led the turnover margin, but couldn't get it done. They couldn't make conversions when they had got those interceptions. I'm trying to see what they did because they scored first, like I said. Utah State also missed a field goal. Utah State had to punt after this. This is the worst. This series is just first quarter is just the worst. So Utah State misses a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I saw this part of the game. Missed field goal, interception. They get an interception from BYU. They stall at 3 plays later. They go 2 yards at midfield. Then BYU gets the ball back and scores a touchdown.
Ouch.
This game. Yeah. And then and then there's also a BYU defensive touchdown as well. So,
I mean, in looking at the box score of this game, it seems eerily similar to the Fresno State game that we talked about just a little bit ago. Because if you look at the, you know, total yardage by half. The Aggies actually outgained the Cougars 154 to 120 in the first half. After halftime, though, Utah State had just 46 yards. And
yeah, they went punt, interception, punt, punt.
They had minus two rushing yards after halftime.
They only had five possessions in the second half. Four possessions in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's probably a situation where the defense can only do so much when the offense is just basically giving you nothing. And, you know, I don't want to put too much blame on Kent Myers, but I think that he needed to probably play a little bit better than he did because he was right around 50% completions, didn't have a touchdown, only had 103 yards. And, you know, some of it is maybe just these growing pains, you know, like, you know, Tony Lindsay had eight carries for 47 yards, which is pretty good per carry average. He almost averaged 6 yards a play, but, you know, I think they wanted him to do more with the opportunities he was given, and he just didn't do it.
Yeah, this was Aggies hung around, but like the one thing in the second half, BYU had a huge, very long 15 play possession. And so that kind of an interception, and they scored off of that. BYU did. So that was it there. But yeah, when you only have four possessions in the second half, you're not going to win many games.
Yeah.
And it's, as of right now, Sunday night, people are saying after Ron Carrigan was fired and Brian Polian left that Matt Wells could be on his way out. I have not seen anything at the moment. So as of Sunday night, Matt Wells is still the head coach. So should we double check Twitter really quick?
Yeah, sure.
Before we move on. Let me double check real quick. We're already at 70 minutes. You're still listening, hopefully.
And if there is no news, of course, pay attention to our website, mwcconnection.com.
Yeah. For everything,
we will have you covered if there is such a move in the future.
Nothing at the moment, so I just wanted to check because he did go. What did they go 3-9 this year? There's a lot of issues. 0-6 away from home, but here's the thing. Like I mentioned before, Aggies aren't reverting back to 08, pre-08, pre-Keaton, so they're okay. They'll be fine. They also had coordinator turnover from the last 2 years. Past couple of years, they lose guys. So, excuse me. There's that as well. So keep your head up. Kent Myers is back. Hopefully Tony Lindsay, you have Rayshon Lewis, Rontavion Carver back there. You got some talent. So final game of the night, which I could see a little bit on Periscope.
Very nice. Very nice. Heroes out there. We salute you.
Yes. Hawaii 46. UMass 40?
Water burner on the island.
Did you know Hawaii almost gave us up by missing an extra point?
Oh, that would not surprise me the way that this Hawaii, it's kind of been a weird season for the Warriors, right? Mm-hmm. But yes. I mean, they found their stride on offense again against UMass where, you know, Drew Brown came back with a vengeance yet again.
I apologize. I watched a field goal. Chiefs off the goal post, no time remaining to win.
Thank goodness.
I'm sorry. That's, you never see that off the goalpost. No time remaining in overtime. Sorry, folks. That's just I saw it go up. I'm like, is it gonna miss it? And then doink and in. So sorry. Continue with your thought.
But you know, Drew Brown came back and threw five touchdowns, had over 300 yards. Deosemi St. Juste had 122 yards and a touchdown. All of that, in spite of the fact that they were penalized for over 100 yards too. And they went just 3 of 13 on third down. I don't know that I've ever seen that kind of disparity before. And UMass had 4 sacks. So,
and a safety.
And a safety. Safety as well. So, I mean, kind of a weird game, all things considered. But, you know, they needed that passing offense to make big plays. And that's kind of what they did. You know, they had 5 plays of more than 20 yards. And they needed every single one of them down the stretch.
And then they didn't nearly blew this game. They're up 40-26.
Yeah.
They're up 14 points. They allow UMass a touchdown, 3-and-out, touchdown again. Then they make it, it's 40-40. They make the extra point. 3 plays, I might add you, 78 yards, missed the extra point.
Yeah, that secondary.
Ooh, that could have cost them.
The secondary is probably going to need some work going forward because I mean, they have some pieces, I think, on this defense. You know, Jelani Tavai probably finished off. I mean, if he's not an all-conference pick, I would be very surprised, you know, because he had 2 sacks, 2.5 tackles for loss. And he's kind of been, the one guy, the MVP of this defense. He's been all over the place, it seems like, from week to week. You know, and I don't know what else you could say. Like, they almost gave it away, but, you know, they did drop 46 on a team that they probably should have been able to drop 46 points on.
And too many passing yards, because Andrew Ford's not the great QB. They do have an NFL caliber tight end. I think it's Adam Brenneman. I want to say that's his name. He wasn't even there. Yeah, he wasn't even. He's a transfer, I think, from Penn State. Not even their leading receiver. They had two guys over 100 yards, so he only had 30. Yes, the secondary needs work, but future's bright as well. Brown's back. St. Just is back. Paul Harris had no carries in this game. Zero carries.
I'm not sure what happened. I was not watching.
He had one reception. I was watching that closely on Periscope.
He did have one catch, though.
He did. I saw that catch, one for five. John Ursa didn't show up very well, 2 for 22. But who is Dylan Colley had a pretty good game. 2 touchdowns, best game of the year, I think. But you get the win. There's still a chance why you could go bowling. Do we want to discuss bowl stuff super quick here, since we're already going very long?
Do we want to save it for our preview show of the conference championship game?
Let's do that, because that won't be as long, and this is already long enough as it is. So
you're welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, we don't need another 20 minutes because of whatever. We're discussing coaching stuff. So that's our Week 13 recap. We have our really quick, for those who are very interested, San Diego State is currently a 6-point favorite over Wyoming in the conference title game. Expected to be very, 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 very cold, but no precipitation at the moment. So check out for that in Laramie. So that's our show for tonight. Quick update for the title game. Oh, yeah, Wyoming is hosting, as we should say, even though they lost. So they're hosting. But check out our website, mwcconnection.com, SoundCloud, Twitter, or whatever. Yeah, we're on Twitter, MWC Connection, SoundCloud. Well, let me get back to the right order. SoundCloud, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher, when it works. Cross my fingers, it works for you, folks. iTunes, leave us a review and tell us if you like us. That's, we want the appreciation from the people.
By the way,
right?
I think we recently passed 2,500 followers on Twitter.
Oh, we did. I got a notification on my phone about that. Yes, we did. Thank you.
So thank you to everybody who follows us on Twitter.
Yes, thank you. We got a few today. We actually just now, Wyoming Assistant Athletic Director is following us.
Hi.
I don't know if that's good or bad. What are they looking at for us?
They must be wondering why, you know, what is this website that Josh Allen keeps liking all their tweets?
Yes, exactly. What is Josh Allen doing? He did like our stuff earlier today. Yes. All right, so that's it for tonight. Our website, mwcconnection.com. We'll be back probably Tuesday night with the early preview bowl stuff as well, and look out for probably some more Facebook videos, maybe not at 10 p.m. at night randomly, but that's the show for tonight. Hope you enjoy this extra long episode. Coaching search offseason is here. Doesn't mean we're done. So, Matt, I'm going to ask you right now. Should we go about once a week in the offseason? Is that maybe doable?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Football year-round. If you like basketball, we're back on Thursday.
Bias never sleeps, you know?
Never sleeps. That's new. Should we make that a t-shirt? Bias never sleeps? Ooh, we might do that.
Woke bias.
Interesting. We'll work on that. But thanks again for listening, folks. And, yes, we are biased against your team.